In preparing for Pesach, one of the preparations consists of selling achamis. The Torah has a prohibition of Ba'yurah Ba'yimotsi, we're not permitted to possess chametz. Not only are we prohibited to eat chametz, not only are we prohibited to gain any pleasure from chametz, to sell it, to make business with chametz, to get hanor, it's even also to keep it around the house. It starts with the Ba'yurah Ba'yimotsi, with its senior ownership. So what you're really supposed to do is to destroy all of the chametz. If you sell your chametz and you plan to buy it back, so legally, this is permissible, but this is what the halacha calls a harama. This is a legal fiction. This is a legal loophole. So the person can have a whole discussion about this. Is there anything wrong with using a legal fiction? It's legal. It's not fictitious. It's legal. But it's a legal fiction. So the question is there anything wrong with it? So the Nesivos, who lived in the early 1800s, one of the major poskim on the Shulchan Aruch, wrote a tshuva about this, and he said there was absolutely nothing wrong with using any harama. He doesn't see why there's anything wrong. One of his contemporaries, the Rav from Buchach, the city in Galicia, sent him a letter disagreeing with him, and he quoted a passage in the Gemara in Shabbos that you're not permitted to do an act of Ha'aroma. So the Nesiva sent him back a letter, which is printed in his collection of Chuvus, and he says, look, do whatever you want. My stock has been accepted all over the world. And he feels that there's nothing wrong with Ha'aroma. Aye, but the passage in the Gemara Shabbos does say that you're not permitted to do an act of Ha'aroma. So if you look in the Gemara in Shabbos, it's talking about a completely different case. It's not talking about a legal fiction. It's talking about an illegal act that's totally not oizgehalten. The Gemara talks about a situation that a person wants to go from one side of the river to the other on Shabbos. How's he going to get on the other side? He's going to go on a boat. But you're not allowed to ride a boat on Shabbos. You're not allowed to go onto a boat knowing in advance that a non-Jew is going to ride the ferry. Let's say they don't charge any money to go on this ferry. You're not allowed to go on the ferry knowing in advance that the non-Jewish rider is going to ride it because he's doing it on your behalf. So the Gemara tells the story that there was once upon a Chacham who had his fields on the other side of the river and he wanted to go see how things are by the fields, whether things are going well or not. But he's not permitted to ride the boat, he's not permitted to go on the boat and have the non-Jew drive it for him. So he knew that at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the Goyish ferryman is going to go take his boat across. So he went onto the ferry, it was open to the public, no charge. Went onto the ferry at 2 o'clock, and he took a nap on the ferry. He took a nap. And then everybody came onto the ferry, they were piling up till 3 o'clock, and he saw everybody was there. He made believe. He didn't take a nap, he was making believe that he could. Then the ferry goes across, the Goyish boatman takes the ferry across the river. And then the Talmid Chacham makes believe that he wakes up, oh, he's on the other side of the river, and he walks off and he goes to see how his fields are doing. And he wants to tell Kohen of Achaena, the same character, did another thing like that, did another thing like that. He did an act that was clearly prohibited, and he made it look like an accident. He made it look as if he didn't do anything wrong. And the Gemara says, what kind of a Talmid Chacham is that? What kind of a rabbi is that? That's prohibited. He's violating the Yisurim. So the Gemara says, well, look here. The only thing that he violated was only Midrabbanan. He didn't violate any Avera Deraita. Since it's not an Avera Deraita, it's only an Avera Derabbanan, and he's a Talmid Chacham, and he made it look like an accident, it's okay. So what in the world does that mean? The Gemara is not to be understood. So if you look into the Gemara carefully, what it appears to be saying is the following. That on Shabbos, there are three categories of prohibitions. One category is you're not permitted to do a melacha deraita. You strike a match on Shabbos, you turn on the light. That's a melacha deraita. Another category is you're not permitted to do a melacha midrabbanan. Let's say instead of writing with your right hand, you write with your left hand. If you're a righty, you write with your right hand, that's a biblical prohibition. If you write with your left hand, then it's only also midrabbanan. But if it's a melacha midrabbanan, you're writing. Or there are many cases like that where a person is doing a malacha which minatora is permitted, but midrabbanan is prohibited. But midrabbanan is violating an act of malacha. So malacha is a malacha, whether you're a Talmid Chacham or you're an Amoris or you're a Balabos, whether they make it look like an accident or not. So malacha is a malacha, it's prohibited. But then there's a third category of things that you're not permitted to do on Shabbos. It's not a malacha minatora, nor is it a malacha midrabbanan. It's only a gzeira. You're not allowed to do this because that A can lead to B. And B is what's prohibited. So we don't allow you to do A, even though A per se is perfectly permissible, because A is going to lead to B. For example, you're not permitted to ride on a boat on Shabbos. Why? Because the oars of the boat may break and you may have to fix something. So it's a day of Misakin Mon. So you're not permitted to climb on a tree because in the process of climbing on a tree, he may break off a branch. You're not permitted to ride an animal on Shabbos, to ride a horse on Shabbos, because it may break off a branch to hit the animal to encourage it to go. So what can you possibly say with the furthest stretch of the imagination? That a person who rides a horse on Shabbos is in violation of kotzer. Violation of kotzer. The melacha is you're not allowed to break off a branch. If you ride a horse, he may break off a branch. How can you say he did an act of kseirah? He didn't break off any branches. We just say that A may lead up to B. Or you're not permitted to play a musical instrument on Shabbos and Yom Tov because it may break and you may fix the musical instrument. You're not allowed to dance on Shabbos and Yom Tov. In the middle of dancing, you're not allowed to clap to keep a tune on Shabbos and Yom Tov because you may be interested in having some musical accompaniment with the dancing, with the clapping, and the musical instrument may break, and then you may go fix it. What are you going to say? That a person who's dancing on Shabbos is in violation of Misakin Mona. He didn't fix anything, he's dancing. A fellow climbs a tree, is in violation of Kotzer. He didn't do an act of Kisira at all, not Minatara, not Midirabbanon. So that's what we call a Gzeira Midirabbanon. It's a prohibition. But it's a lower level prohibition. We forbid you to do an act which is not a malach at all because it may possibly lead to a malach. So the Gemara raises the question, what do you mean it's going to lead to a malach? But if I know in my heart that I'm a big tzaddik and I'm a Talmud Chacham and I know what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. So what do you mean? You tell me I'm not allowed to climb on a tree, I'm not allowed to ride on a horse, I'm not allowed to dance, I'm not allowed to play the piano because I may get carried away and I'll forget and I'll do the thing that's prohibited. But I know what's permissible and what's prohibited, so I know I'm going to do this, that can, and I know I'm not going to do that. So the Chachamim can't say, well, we leave it up to you. If you feel that you may fall in, so then don't do it. If you're sure that you won't fall in, then you can go ahead, you don't have to do it. They're going to leave it up to every individual person. So everybody will say, look, I'm a tzaddik, I know the dinim, there's nothing to be afraid of. So the Chachamim had to introduce what we call a lo plug rabbonim. We don't distinguish between the person who knows what he's doing, who doesn't know. We prohibit everybody from doing this act because A may possibly lead up to B. So the Gemara says, but really, the fellow is really a Talmud Chacham and he knows what he's doing. So it really doesn't make any sense to prohibit it. So, then the Gemara says that he's not doing a Malacha Deraisa, he's not doing a Malacha Derabbanan. He's only doing an act which is only a Gzeira, and he knows what's permissible and what's prohibited. And he makes it look like an accident. Look, if he's going to go climb on the trees and the Talabatim is going to watch the rabbi's climbing on the trees, the rabbi's riding on the horse. If he does it, I can do it also. No. So if the rabbi makes it look like an accident and nobody realizes that he's really doing it on purpose, it looks as if it was just done accidentally, so then the Talmud says, then it's permissible. That's the interpretation of that passage in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Ha'arameh, that's an act of Ha'arameh where a fellow does something that's prohibited, and he makes it look like an accident. That's not a harama as we call it today in halachic literature, harama as in using the term as a legal fiction. That's the meaning of the passage in the Gemara, that harama is prohibited with respect to an issa deraisa and only permitted with respect to an issa derabbanan. What do you mean it's permissible with respect to an issa derabbanan? Not every issa derabbanan, only a gzeira. In the area of gzeira, the act per se is permissible. It's just we're afraid that A is going to lead up to B. But then we say, if the fellow's a Talmud Chacham and he makes it look like an accident, then it's permissible. But it's because of that passage in the Gemara that there is a group of Achronim, there is a group of later Poskim from the 1600s, who came up with the following compromise. That to possess Chometz on Pesach is a biblical prohibition. That's a Poskim in the Chumash. Leivolach HaChometz, Leivolach HaStor. Not only is it forbidden to eat, not only is it forbidden to get Hanoah, it's forbidden to keep it in your possession, in your ownership, even if you're not going to eat it. What about to possess chometz which is not be'en, it's only taruvet. If you have spaghetti, or if you have cookies, or you have bread in the freezer, so that's chometz be'en, that's actual chometz. What if I have some kind of a food that has a little bit of, let's say I have gefilte fish that has chometz dik and matzah mel in it. So which is in the majority? Is it more than 50% is a matzah, chometz dik and matzah mel, or more than 50% is the fish? Depends who makes it. Okay. I don't know. Okay. So if it's more than 50% of other ingredients and less than 50% of the chametz, that's called taruvet chametz. Whenever you have more than 50% of chametz, then it's chametz. Then it's like a loaf of bread. And if it's less than 50% of chametz, then it's only called taruvet chametz. Taruvet chametz means that it's mixed in with other food. Taruvet chametz, you're not allowed to eat, and you're not allowed to gain any pleasure from it, and you're not allowed to keep it around the house either. But that's the question this prohibition against keeping tarubas, kamis, around the house, keeping them in your possession, is that a biblical Easter, or is that only a rabbinical Easter? So this is an argument between Rashi and the Rabbi Natam, at the very beginning, the first Mishnah and the third Perek of Pesachim. The Mishnah says, Ve'elu oivrim b'pesach, the following food, you're not allowed, you're oivr. That's the question, what does it mean, you're oivr? You're oivr, you're in violation if you have this, what does it mean? And the Mishnah speaks about tarubas chametz. Chametz that's mixed in with other foods, and it's less than 50% of the mixture. So Rashi says, what are you oivr? So Rashi says, if somebody has this chametz around the house, he's oivr, like we say in Yiddish, he's oivr. He's oivr and aveir. Oivr and aveir. What aveir? Bal yirah, bal yimotzei. Rashi claims that it's prohibited min ha-Torah to keep tarubas chametz in your possession on paper. And the Rabbi Natam says that that's a Yiddish expression, you're oivr. You don't, that's not the way you speak Hebrew. In Hebrew you wouldn't say, the fellow, he's oivr, but that's not. It's a Yiddishism. He says that's not what it means. Elo oivrim means you have to take it off of the table. You have to put it away in the closet. Elo oivrim, lahavir, me'ala shulchan. Lahavir me'ala shulchan. Aye, but there is another Gemara in the first parak that you're not allowed to have chametz around the house, even if it's only in tarubis, even if it's only in mixture, and it's less than 50%. Rabbi Natan says, yeah, that's only an Eastern of the Rabbanim. There's no ba'yiroi min ha-Torah. That's how the Tosafot says in the first daf in Pesachim on that base of analysis. Even the Rabbi Natan, who reads the Mishnah, the Elo Oivim Pesach, Oivim Yala Shulchan, you have to remove it from the table, but there's no prohibition of Ba'yiro Ba'yimotzi, but he agrees that with the Rabbanim you're not allowed to have. With the Rabbanim there is a din of Ba'yiro Ba'yimotzi. So it's because of this Rabbi Natan that Rav Soloveitchik used to recommend, the Rav used to recommend that we should observe the Chumrah from the Achrenim that runs as follows. That as far as macaroni, and as far as cake and cookies and bread is concerned, that's real chametz. The real chametz is real bal yirah bal yimotzei min ha-Torah. That's a real biblical prohibition. And the Gemara says in Shabbos, and that's Kuf Lamed Tes, that's the Gemara we refer to, that with respect to a biblical prohibition, in Issur D'oraisa, you're not permitted to use any haromer. And the chirat chametz is after all a haromer. If you sell a chametz and goodbye and good luck, you're not going to buy it back. That's not a haromer. I sold it. But if I sell it and I plan to buy it back, that's clearly a legal fiction. So since it's an act of haram, so you're not allowed to do an act of haram with respect to an Issur D'oraisa. But with respect to Taruvah's comment, if I have this gefilte fish and I can ascertain that it's only less than 50% of the ingredients are chametz, or any other food that have, you have candies or other things that have a little bit of chametz mixed in, but it's clearly less than 50% of the whole mixture. So that's called Taruvah's comment. That's not chametz b'yen. It's not considered the noticeable, it's considered the tarubis. And then, since the Rabbi Natan says that the whole violation of Ba'yiroi Ba'yimati is only with the Rabbanon, so there you're permitted to rely on the Mechiras Chametz to use the Harom. This wasn't Rav Soloveitchik's original Chumrah. He didn't make up Chumrah. He used to quote, that's what it says in the Achrenim. That's what it says in some poetry. And the Nesibis is the one who said that that's wrong. The Nesibis wrote in his Tshuva, he says, what do you mean? He writes to the B'chachirah, what do you mean? You want to have a Chumrah? Do whatever you want. But my stock was accepted all over. How come he says that there's nothing wrong with Haromah? So he says, if you look in that Gemara Shabbos and that Kuf Lamed Tes, we just explained before, it's not talking about a legal fiction. It's talking about a person doing the actual violation itself and making it look like an accident. That has nothing to do with the kind of Haromah that we're talking about. What's Taka the Din of using a legal fiction? Is that permissible or not? In other words, you're employing a legal fiction, so you're in violation of the spirit of the law, but you're not in violation of the letter of the law. That's what it means. Torah wants us to get rid of the chametz. If we don't get rid of the chametz, you leave it in your cabinet, you sell the chametz to the nochri, and after Pesach, you buy it back. So we left our chametz in the house by using a dreidel, by using a legality. So what's the din? Are you permitted to use this kind of a legal fiction with respect to Din Hatter? So the Taisus and Choris, of all places, in the beginning of course, that Gimel Mabay, Taisus points out the following. That Bizman Sheh Beit HaMikdash HaYakayam, when the Beit HaMikdash was still standing, and one was able to offer sacrifices in the Beit HaMikdash, so if a farmer had, when a cow gives birth to the first vlad, the first calf, and it's a male, so it's considered a carbon. It has the kedusha of Bechor Behema Torah. So you have to bring it on the Mizbeach in the Beit HaMikdash. So if a person wants to avoid having his animals kodesh kedusha Bechor Behema Torah, what he has to do is have a partnership with a non-Jew. If he has a, if his ranch is owned, if his farm is owned with a non-Jew as a partner, okay? So that's, he has 25 shutzim, and one of the shutzim is a goy. So he doesn't even have, the goy doesn't have to have more than 50% shutzim. So he must, even if he has a very slight percentage of the shutzim, so even if he only owns the ear of the animal, the tip of the ear, so the Gemara says that's enough to remove the whole din of Bechor Behemoth. But the question is, what if the farmer is not interested in having any non-Jewish partners? It's all in the family. It's the father with his brothers, with his grandfather, with his uncle, everybody's in the family. He only wants to have Jewish partners. He doesn't want to deal with non-Jews. He only wants to have a non-Jewish partner in order to avoid the laws of Bechor Behemoth. Adaf HaMashat is good. He needs a goy to be a shutif in order to, that the Bechor Behemoth shouldn't have the Kedusha as Bechor. So is that permissible? That's a harama. That's a legal fiction. You're making a goya shutif in the company, in the farm, and just in order to avoid the law of Bechor Behemoth. So is that permissible or not? So the Tesis points out that it makes a difference whether it's Bizman Shabbos HaMikdash Kayim or it's Bizman HaZeh. Bizman Shabbos HaMikdash HaYakayim, and they had the opportunity of bringing the behemoth to the Beis HaMikdash and sacrificing it as a carbon, so you're not permitted to do an act of harama, because by using this legal fiction, you're being mevatel a mitzvah. The Torah wants you to do a mitzvah and bring the carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, you're not going to do the mitzvah. You make a shutzus with a goy. Solely, this is the whole motivation, in order to avoid having the carbon offered in the Beis HaMikdash, so that's harama to ruin a mitzvah. So that you're not permitted to do. And the Gemara tells the story that there was a tzaddik who did this, and he was punished in all of his behemoth died. He lost a fortune of money. He wanted to save money, and he lost a fortune of money. But Tosis points out in another Gemara, based on other passages in the Gemara, that after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, and you no longer have the opportunity to bring the karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, so you can't do the mitzvah. So what do you do? Let's say a farmer in New York State, there are Jews who own farms in America. So what does a Jewish farmer do if he has animals? And this is the season of the Yitzhak, and the springtime is when the animals give birth. So what do you do if the cows are about to give birth? They may have a male lad, they may have a male calf first, and has a din that it's like a carbon, and you can't bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. So what do you do? So the din is you have to wait till it gets a mum, till it breaks the leg, or till it cuts, rips the knee, or till it rips the lips or something, or till the eyes get injured. You have to wait till it gets a mum kavua, and then you permit it to shecht it outside of the Beis HaMikdash. It can take years and years to get a mum kavua. And you're not permitted to make the mum be a dayim. You're not permitted to ask a non-Jew to make the mum. You're not even permitted to hint to the non-Jew. You can't get a Shabbos blood and tell him, I'm not allowed to make a mum. Maybe you can help me out. Maybe you have some aid with me. You're not allowed to cause the mum to occur in the behemoth. So what are you going to do? The Mishnah describes the situation that there was a cow that was roaming around on a farm that was owned by a Jewish farmer. And there was a non-Jewish policeman or a soldier, whatever, who used to be stationed near that farm. And he asked the Jewish farmer, how come they don't use this cow for any purpose? So the farmer explained to him, this is a holy cow. It's a korban mitzvah. We have to wait till it gets a mum. And it was years and years, and the mum didn't develop. They have to wait. So the goyish policeman was a nice fellow. So he said, no problem. He went and he made the mum. And the Jewish farmer felt so bad, he didn't mean to leave the goy on to make the mum, but the goy made the mum. So he had to go ask a shayla, what's the din? Because it's a penalty in the rabbanon that you're not allowed to shech the bechor if you made the mum yourself or if you encouraged the goy to make the mum. But here he didn't mean that at all. The policeman just asked him, he walked over here every week in front of his, every day in front of his farm, and he sees a behemoth, dreit tacharum, and no one does anything to him. He says, just asked him, what's going on over here? They just explained what it was. It was the firstborn. It was a male. You're not allowed to do anything. We don't have a holy temple. Huh? You have to wait till it gets a mum, and it didn't develop a mum. So the Jew didn't really intend to get the goy. So the Mishnah has a whole discussion. What do you do over this? So the Tosafos says, "Bizman hazeh, bizman shein beis hamikdash kayim." Why do we make a shutzus with a non-Jew if you have a farm? Why do we make a shutzus? In order to avoid fulfilling the mitzvah of bringing the carbon? No, we can't fulfill the mitzvah anyway. We don't have a beis hamikdash. We do it in order to avoid having somebody violate the Avera of being Nene from the Bechor. Because Kol Zman, that the Bechor doesn't have a mum, so you're not allowed to shecht it outside of the Beis HaMikdash, it's an Avera, you're not allowed to ride on it, you can't use it for any Malacha, has to just sit there and Fai Lavek, you can't do anything with the behemoth. So that's a tremendous difficulty, to keep an animal around and not to be Nene from it and not to shecht it and just keep on feeding and waiting till it gets a mum. not to encourage anybody else to make a mum, to protect the animal from getting a mum, and hope and pray that it's going to get a mum. So that's very difficult. The Taisa says, what motivated people, bizman shebeis hamigdush hayikayim, what motivated people to make a shutzis with a non-Jew? Because they wanted to get rid of the mitzvah. So that's an aveira. To use the haramah in order to get rid of it, in order not to fulfill a mitzvah, that's not permissible. But what motivates people today to make a shutzis with a non-Jew on a farm is not because you want to get rid of the mitzvah, but rather you want to avoid violation of aveira. So that's wonderful. You should always do any act of, whenever the issue that we're dealing with is an aveira. And by hook or by crook, you have a method of avoiding the aveira. So aveira is to do whatever you can in order to avoid having an aveira. Because the mitzvah anyway you can't fulfill today. We don't have a beis hamikdash. So with respect to mechiras chametz, that's what the majority of the pasuk said. With respect to mechiras chametz, when we sell the chametz to the non-Jew, are we selling the chametz? What motivates us to sell the chametz? We sell the chametz in order to get rid of the mitzvah of tashbisu, of destroying the chametz in our Pesach? No. Everybody burns a little bit of chametz in our Pesach. We fulfill the mitzvah. We just... Is it going to be a bigger mitzvah if you have 100 pounds of chametz as opposed to 1 pound of chametz? Is it a bigger mitzvah to burn 100 pounds? No. The mitzvah is to burn the last amount of chametz that you happen to have in your possession. So if I have 100 pounds of chametz and I sell all 100 pounds to the non-Jew, intending to buy it all back, and I'm not going to destroy any chametz. So that you're not allowed to do. That's how haramah. I've done a legal fiction in order to get rid of the mitzvah of tashbis. But we don't do that. We don't sell all 100 pounds. We sell 99 pounds of the chametz to the non-Jew, and we sell the one, and we burn the 1 pound of chametz. So we are fulfilling the mitzvah. So what in the world do we sell the 99 pounds of chametz for? In order not to violate bayirah, bayimotzei. So that's an act of haramah to avoid violation of an aveira. So that's perfectly all right. That's so, hesed gomer.
Why the floor? You didn't have an ace. You can't bring it forward. Yeah, by the chametz, you can burn it.
Right, but burning the 100 pounds as opposed to the 1 pound will not enhance the mitzvah.
No, but I'm not going to be different from making up a day. There's a way out. You don't have to necessarily.
Right. But once the issue involved is avoiding an aveira, then there's nothing wrong with avoiding the aveira by using a legal fiction. By hook or by crook, as long as you avoid the aveira. Like the Torah prohibits us from shaving our beard with a razor. What if a person wants to be clean shaven? So he gets a shaver, that's permissible. But he's shaving. So what's an afkamini shaving? But as long as he does it, better. Torah says you're not allowed to have meat with milk together. So have a meat meal, then I have a cup of coffee, and I put in part of the milk. But it's meat and milk, so it's an act of haram. What about kibbutz? But I didn't violate the aver. If it's kosher, it's kosher. I have imitation chazer. Whatever. I have imitation, whatever. Shrimp. Okay. Kosher. Mendel's Heimish shrimp. So what's wrong? You're not allowed to eat shrimp, but imitation shrimp, so you don't have to eat whatever you want, as long as you're not violating an aver. You're not allowed to use a legal fiction to become potter from a mitzvah, but to use a legal fiction in order not to violate an aver, you don't have to, as long as you didn't do the aver. So there's no aver. So what's wrong? So that's what the overwhelming majority of the pastors said. That there's nothing wrong with selling the chametz, even the spaghetti and the macaroni and the bread and the cake and the cookies and everything. Rav Soloveitchik always used to recommend that we should be machmer for that opinion in the poskim, that they distinguish between a din d'oraisa as opposed to a din d'rabbanan. But our real chametz the end, that Bali Rabbi Mot is an issa d'oraisa, so then you shouldn't sell to the goy. And on Taruvah's chametz, when the chametz, when the proportion of the chametz in the mixture is less than 50%, then the Rabbeinu Tam says that it's only by Yerom and the Rabbanon, so you can rely on the Rabbeinu Tam, whose opinion is that it's only by Yerom and the Rabbanon, to say that you can do an act of haram. That's how he used to recommend that we should be machmas for the... People always have an image of Soloveitchik as a big maker. I'm not sure. If you look into it, I don't know if it's exactly so. I think he was more of a machmas than he was a maker. Had a lot of chumras that were not so... not everybody helped me.
The point of Soloveitchik, you'd have to write your own liquor collection every year.
So then when he used to say this in public, I remember the Shia, so people would ask him in Maria, in the Shia, in Yiddish, and what about Schnapps, Rebbe? So he would say, Besser nicht zu fragen. Better not to ask, because he'd rather not discuss in the public. Because the Shulchan Aruch quotes in the name of the Rosh, in the back of the Gemara Pesachim, that liquor is considered chametz bien. Liquor is considered more than 50%.
What do you answer?
Because the flavor is so sharp, so that's why the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rosh, that that's considered chametz bien. And others disagreed. That's the machlokes where the liquor is considered chametz b'yeh, taruvcha. So his opinion was like the Tanya Shulchan Aruch, liquor is chametz b'yeh. So they would ask him, so he said it's better not to discuss that.
What about Bergwald? Are you trying to leave the Bergwald?
Bergwald is a big problem. Why would a Chachamim permit it to institute Bergwald? Because it's a mitzvah. That's not only an aver, that's a mitzvah. Tishmetenu and Natasha. That's a big problem. So the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch talk about that. They talk about in Hilchas Yerusha. The Torah says that when a man dies, so the firstborn son gets a double portion, if he has a firstborn son. First one is a daughter, then he's not caught. But the first one is a son, so he gets a double portion. All the other sons get one portion. So the person wants to give his daughter the Yerusha, but he doesn't want to give the son some much. So the Shulchan Aruch tells you how you can arrange it, how you can rig it, if you get a good lawyer, how you can arrange it that the core will not be getting the double portion, and the daughters will also get, and the wife will also get a significant amount. So the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch have, how are you permitted to do that? That's a mitzvah. The Torah says that's a mitzvah. The father has a mitzvah, an obligation to speak to it that the kor gets pishnayim. So true, you're permitted to do a haroma in order not to violate an avera. It says in the Torah, lo yuchal abakar es ben ahuvan. He's not allowed to cheat the kor. It's an avera. But it's not only an avera, it's a mitzvah also. So how are you permitted to do haroma to avoid a mitzvah sesay? That's one of the kashas that they have. They ask about a heter risk also. All the people in business, when they lend money, so you're not permitted to charge any interest. But everybody knows, you make a heter risk and everything is okay. So the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch and Chayesh Mishpat are very troubled, but the heter risk is in general troubling. It's very, very difficult in institution heter risk. But in principle, leaving out the details, in principle it's very difficult because one of the mitzvahs in the Torah is to give an interest-free loan to a person who needs. If he's a multimillionaire and he wants to become
richer,
so there's no mitzvah milah chasadim. No, if business is business, I want to get rich also. So you'll make a heter risk and you'll pay me. But if he's never hanor man, if he's a poor man, so the Torah has a mitzvah milah chasadim to give him an interest-free loan. So how am I permitted to give a loan to a person who's really in need, an ani, and say, well, look, I'm doing you a favor. If you would borrow the money from the bank, they would charge you so much interest. I only want half the amount of interest. But I'm not allowed to take any interest. I'll make a heter risk and I'll get half the interest. How can we do that? That's a harame. It's a legal fiction. If it's done properly, it's legal. But it's a legal fiction with your mevatla mitzvah. Fine that you're not violating the aveira of ribis, but you're not fulfilling the mitzvah of gemilah chesed either. So that's a good kash. That's a major kash. That the mefarshim happens to be the same with Chacha Rav. The Chacha Rav who wrote the letter disagreeing with the nesivis about the mechiras chametz, he has a running commentary on the bottom of Chayesh Mishpat that's called Kesef HaKadoshim. He's the one who talks about this. He has a lot to say about haram. He doesn't really come up with a satisfactory answer though. On the heteriske and on the tavoyes, when people make tavoyes in order to see to it that the daughters get Yerusha and that the wife gets Yerusha, he doesn't really come up with a satisfactory answer. I really wanted to talk tonight about something else as was advertised. We're supposed to talk tonight about freedom. Pesach is called Zman Chayrusenu. It's not some they advertise in the newspapers like that, the holiday appeal. That's what it says in the Siddur. And the Siddur was composed, the text of the Davening was composed by the Tanoim, by the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. The Pesach we are supposed to celebrate our freedom, and this is a din in the Torah. A Jew is not permitted to allow himself to become enslaved. The Chumash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells B'nai Yisrael, Tzivi B'nai Yisrael Avodim. And the Gemara comments, V'lo Avodim Avodim. We're not permitted to be Avodim to another human being, but it's prohibited for a Jew to sell himself as an Eved Ivri. He's forbidden to become a slave. And it's even a question in Rishonim, what about to work for somebody else? Is it permissible for a Jew to work for somebody else? Every Jew has to be self-employed. Maybe there's a prohibition involved. If I work for someone else, I'm already an Eved. So that's the question. So the Gemara in the first paragraph in Bava Metzia seems to say very clearly that there's nothing wrong with that. When a person sells himself as an Eved Ivri for 6 years, or for more, or for less, whatever, the din is when a bezin sells a ganet, when a person is a ganet, and he doesn't have money to pay, so the bezin sells him for 6 years. If he stole so much money that he's going to have to work for 6 years to pay it back, then the bezin will sell him. If he only stole $10,000, then they don't sell him for 2 months. They don't sell him at all. Either you sell for 6 years, or you don't sell for longer, you don't sell for less. That's the bezin sell. What happens if the person wants to sell himself as an Eved Ivri? So then, a mecher atzmo, not as opposed to machru bezin, so there's a dispute in the Gemara, and we ask him, he can sell himself for less than 6 years, for more than 6 years, whatever he wants, but the Gemara says that it's prohibited, it's an aveir, to sell himself as an aveir. So So the Gemara seems to say, why is that an Aveira? Because when a person sells himself as a slave, as an Eved Ivri, he stopped till the end of the time that he made the contract for. If he sold himself for 6 years, or for 2 years, or for 10 years, he's stuck, and there's no way to get out of it, unless the Balabot, unless his Odom, agreed to give him a Shtar Shichur. But without the agreement of the Odom, he cannot break out, he cannot become free on his own. Masha'ini came, the Gemara says, a poel, a worker, a fellow has a job. So the Gemara says, a worker, al-Pidin, has the right to quit whenever he wants, unless by quitting he will cause a hefsid for the Balabot. That's a special thing. Let's say, it's a busy season, the tax season, and then punks on April 10th, I'm an accountant and I work in a firm, and I decide I want to quit, and the boss of the firm won't be able to finish all the work on time. Or let's say, I began to fix someone's roof, and then the forecast comes that it's going to rain today, and he needs to be finished today, otherwise it's going to leak in, and his whole furniture is going to get ruined, and his rugs, and his paintings, and everything. And I say, I'm going on vacation. Shmizach Dagan ain't going to cut. Speak to your own roof. I'm not interested. So the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to do that. That's a hezek. If he's going to cause a hezek, then he can't do that. But whenever the worker's quitting will not cause a hefsid moment to the balabas, so then Allah says he can quit even in the middle of the day. And he's entitled to demand payment for the part of the work that he did, even though he didn't finish the job. You have to prorate it and figure out. Let the Mishnah says, let's say if the boss is going to have to engage someone to do the second half of the work, and it's going to cost more for the second half, so then the whole discussion in the Mishnah, how much am I entitled to collect for the first half of the work? So why can I demand 50% of the money, or only less? There's no discussion in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, how do you know that a worker has a right to quit on the job? So the Gemara derives it from this pasuk. So the pasuk says, "Ki li b'nei Yisrael avodim," and the implication is, "V'lo avodim l'avodim," that we're not permitted to allow ourselves to become slaves. It's prohibited for a Jew to sell himself as an Eved Ivri, and it would have been prohibited to get a job, to be employed by somebody else, if not for the fact that you have a right to quit in the middle. But because of the fact that a worker can always quit in the middle of the job, unless he's making a hefsid, but if he's not making a hefsid, he has a right to quit. So therefore, he's never in violation of Ki li b'nei Yisrael avodim. That's what it seems to say in the Gemara. That's what the Tosha says on the Gemara. That's a simple shot. In the Shulchan Aruch, they quote a different opinion, a dissenting view from the Mordechai, one of the later Balei HaSefer. The Mordechai says that even when a person gets a job, it's also a shayla of a possible violation of Avodim Lavodim. So the Mordechai is obviously, there are two versions exactly of what this sheet is saying. The one version runs as follows. In the Chumash, it says that an Eved Ivri works, the Eved Ivri who's sold by Bezin, works for 6 years. And then it says at the end of the 6 years, when he's set free by his master, the master has to give him ha'anok, he has to give him a gift, a bonus, a food and drink and everything. Because ki mishnas kasachar avot, he worked for you twice as hard as a worker. In what sense did he work twice as hard? Mishnah, like Mishnah Torah, twice. Mishnas kasachar avot, in what sense did he work twice as hard? The Tosfos has one interpretation based on the Gemara at the end of Shabbos, that in the days of the Tanakh, the average contract would be for 3 years. And the Eved Ivri is sold for 6 years. When Bezin sells a person who stole money, doesn't have what to pay back, so the Bezin sells him for 6 years. The six is twice as much as three. The Mishnah is Tatsachni that he works for 6 years as opposed to three. So that's why there's one opinion in the Shulchan Aruch that's quoted, comes from the Mordechai, that a person is only permitted to sign a contract to work for somebody else up to 3 years. Anything in excess of 3 years is already too much, and that's a violation of Avodim L'Avodim. The other opinion is no, that the only time you're in violation of Avodim is if you sign a contract to work for somebody else. I'm not talking about a slave, a worker. To sign a contract is if you sign a contract for 6 years. 6 years is an Eved Ivri already. But anything up until 6 years, let's say 5 years, 5.5 years, 5 years and 11 months and 25 days, that's mutter. But to sign a contract for 6 years or more, that would be prohibited. So these are the opinions that are quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. In Europe, they used to have difference in hugging when people would sign a contract. So someone signed 3-year contracts, and someone signed 5-year contracts. And 6-year contracts or more, most people would not sign because of this chashash. Because of the opinion of the Mordechai that the prohibition of Ki li b'nei Yisrael avodim le'avodim avodim is not only applicable to one who sells himself as an Eved Ivri, it even applies to a person who is not self-employed. If I work for somebody else in such a way that I signed a contract to obligate, if I work every year, year after year, I have a 1 year contract, a 2 year contract. So that's okay. But if I sign a contract, milachatzila, to work for more than 3 years, or according to the other opinion, to work for 6 years or more, so that's already in violation of avodim lavodim. The Torah is very makpid about the chayut. The din is that an eved, one who is an eved kanaini, is potter from being oyla regal. On Pesach Shavuot Sukkot, there's an obligation that every Jew has to be oyla regal to visit the Beit HaMikdash and bring the korbanot. Shalosh Pam Lashon Yivor Kol Zechurcha, they have to visit the Beit HaMikdash and develop a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara says, what's the din of a woman? Is a woman obligated or not? So the Gemara says, no. So in the Pasuk, Yivor Kol Zechurcha, only the men are obligated, the women are not obligated. Then the Gemara says, what about an Eved Kanaini? Is an Eved Kanaini obligated to observe this mitzvah? So the Gemara says no, because how do you know that an Eved Kanaani is obligated to keep any of the mitzvahs? How do you know it all? Because we have Gzeirah Shavah, lo lo me'isho. Whatever mitzvahs the women are obligated in, so the Eved Kanaani is also obligated in. Whatever mitzvahs the women are not obligated in, so the Eved Kanaani is also not obligated. So since the women are clearly exempt from this mitzvah, because the Yivah calls the Kursa, so the Avadim are also exempt. The same, let's say, tefillin. A woman is not obligated in tefillin, so an Eved Kanaani is also not obligated to wear tefillin. What if a person is a chatzi eved, a chatzi ben chayrut? The Gemara talks about such cases. An eved was owned by two partners, and one partner freed the eved, and the other partner didn't. So you have the eved is in limbo. He's a chatzi eved and a chatzi ben chayrut. So the Gemara says, well, the fact that he's a chatzi ben chayrut, he's half free, obligates him to keep all of the mitzvahs that the ben chayrut have to keep. So he has to sit in the sukkah, and he has to take a lulav, and he has to wear tefillin, and he has to do everything. What about Aliyah LaRegel? Does he have to visit the Beit HaMikdash on Pesach Shavuot Sukkot? So the Gemara says, no, that's not. Because there, it's not only that the Eved is not Mechuyiv. The half that the Eved is not Mechuyiv to be Aliyah LaRegel, but the half that the Ben Chorin is Mechuyiv. And Eved has no shaykhis with Aliyah LaRegel. He's Mufkir from the midst of Aliyah LaRegel. So we learn that from a separate Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Shalosh Pam Hashana, Yivah called Kurcha Penei Ha'odon Hashem. The mitzvah of Aliyah LaRegel appears in three different places in Chumash. And in the end, the Parshat Mishpatim, the term that's used is Yivah called Kurcha as Penei Ha'odon. They should visit their master, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara says to the exclusion of an Eved Kanaani who has a different master. He has a master, his Odon, his Basav Odon, his human master. So since he's an Eved to another human being, he's unable to develop a relationship directly with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Less. The Gemara says an Eved Ivri is not so much of an Eved. But an Eved Kanaani is really an Eved. The Gemara has Eved Ivri is much less of an Eved than an Eved Kanaani. It's still a violation. A person is not permitted to sell himself as an Eved Ivri because the Torah requires we should all be free. To leave in Eretz Yisrael, Avadim, 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 but he's not as much of an Eved as an Eved Kanaani is. So the Gemara says, with respect to all other mitzvahs like tzitzis and tefillin, and shayfer and lulav and sukkah, that a woman is potter from, and an eved is potter. But if he's a chati eved, the chati ben chayim, the chati ben chayim, and he's mechayiv him, and the shayfer and the lulav and the tzitzis and the tzitzis. But aliyah laregel to visit the Beit HaMikdash, that's a different kind of a mitzvah. It's not just that an eved is not mechayiv. An eved is a ptur. If you have any abdus in you, that cancels the whole mitzvah of aliyah laregel, because a person who is an Eved to another human being cannot become an Eved to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rabbani Shlom freed us at the time of his Yetzias Mitzrayim, and he said he's freeing us the purpose. Moshe Rabbeinu was told in advance that the purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim is what Yachas Amin Mitzrayim Tavnin Es Elokim Al Ahor Hazeh. The purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim is in order to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order to become Avodin to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Medrash has a whole description of the way Paro freed the Bnei Yisrael the night of Makas Bechayrus, because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu by the Bris Ben Absorim that in the future generations, Yer Yezarach Beretz Lolahen, that his descendants would be in another foreign country other than Eretz Yisrael, Vavodun Ve'inu Olsam, and they'll be slaves, and they'll be suffering, they'll be tortured. So the Gzeira was that Bris Ben Absorim contained two parts to it, that the Jewish people would be Avodim, they would be legally considered slaves, and Dino Osim, and they would be suffering. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu let the Jewish people free on the occasion of Makas Bechayrus, so that was the end of the Inui. They didn't suffer anymore. But how did they become legally freed? So they had to have they were slaves of the government in the Mitzrayim. So they had to have a declaration of the government freeing them, like if you have an Eved Kanani or an Eved Ivri, you have to have a Shtar Shichur. You have to have some legal form declaring that the Eved becomes free. So the Medrash says, where were they freed? You don't find anything in the Chumash. So the Medrash adds on that at Chatzos HaLaila, when Parah finally realized that everybody's dying, and he realized he better set B'nai Yisrael free, so he went and he made an official government declaration that up until now the Jewish people were slaves to Parah. But from now on they are no longer slaves to Parah, they are slaves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he encourages them to say Hallel, Hallel Avdei Hashem Velo Avdei Parah. That's the whole text of the Medrash. That now they're no longer slaves to Parah, they are slaves of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Medrash is trying to bring out this point that the whole purpose of freedom is to become Avadim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be able to have a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Jews throughout all the years were always in the forefront of fighting for freedom. In all the revolutions all over the world, American Revolution, French Revolution, the Communist Revolution, all over the Jews were fighting. But the freedom wasn't always understood by the people who were fighting. They thought freedom, that you don't have to be an Eved to the other fellow, but they didn't understand fully what the freedom means. Freedom, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, that the Aseres HaDibros were engraved on the two Luchos, the expression used in the Chumash is Charut. Ala Luchos, Charut means engraved. So the Mishnah has a play on words, the letters Ches, Resh, Vav, Tav, spell in other words, Cherus, freedom. So the Mishnah says, Al Tikri Charus, Ala Cherus, Ein Lecho Ben Chorem, Mishoisik Batorah, that a person is only really called free if he's an Eved to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If he has something to strive for, but some a person is free to watch television all day and to gamble and to play cards and to waste time and to go to the horse races or something. That's not called a Ben Chorin. Chorin is one who's no longer Abdei Paro and he's an Eved to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the whole idea of Tiras HaOmer. That we don't just go free on Pesach and we're free. No, we start right away on the second day, the first day of Chol HaMoed, the second day of Pesach, we start right away to count Tiras to demonstrate that the freedom that we have gained on Pesach is not yet complete until we're being Mekabel Torah at Har Sinai, until we experience Shavuot. And Shavuot is the completion of the Yom Tov of Pesach. Ramban points out on Chumash that there are three Shalosh Ugalim, the three Yom Tovim, and each one has a different number of days. There's no correspondence whatsoever. You have Pesach has 7 days, Sukkot has 8 days, and Shavuot has 1 day. How come there's no symmetry? But the Ramban says there is symmetry. Sukkot has 7 days, and Shmini Atzeres is regal bifnei atzmo, separate Yom Tov, and Pesach has 7 days, and Shavuot is a regal bifnei atzmo, and Shavuot is referred to in the Mishnah as Atzeres, just like in the Chumash, Shmini Atzeres is the 8th day, the last day of Sukkot. So the Mishnah, in the Chumash, it's never, in Tanakh, it's never referred to as Atzeres, but in the Mishnah, the Yom Tov shel Atzeres, the Yom Tov of Shavuot is always referred to as Atzeres, because the 8th day, following the 7 days of Pesach, and you have the Tiras HaOmer is like a long Chol HaMoed. That's the expression that the Ramban writes. It's like a long Chol HaMoed connecting Shavuot with Pesach to bring out this theme that the freedom of Pesach doesn't just mean we're free, we don't have to be slaves to a human being. We have to be Avdei Hashem. Halu Avdei Hashem, Eloi Avdei Paro. And that's why there's a dispute in the Gemara. What should the text of the Haggadah on Leil Pesach consist of? The Mishnah says that on Pesach night when you tell the story of the Yetzias Mitzrayim, you have to tell the story by contrast. That Masel Beginus on the Sayyim Bishvat, you have to begin describing the sad situation that our forefathers were in, and then to conclude with the Geula. So what exactly does that refer to? So the Gemara has a dispute between Rav and Shmuel, what is the correct, what is the proper Nusach from that Geula. So one version is that you say Mitzchila of the Avodah Zarah Hoy Avodahenu, the Asher Kervan HaMakom Lavei Dosa, that years ago our forefathers, Avram Avinu's father and Avram Avinu, when he was young, used to worship Avodah Zarah. And then the Jewish people outgrew the Avodah Zarah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us as his special nation, and they took us out. And they gave us the Torah. That's the description of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That doesn't sound like the description of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The other opinion sounds better. You say, Avodim Hayinu Lefarvim Mitzrayim, Be'yakeyan Hashem Elkeinu Misham, Be'achazach Vizvon Etuyot. We used to be slaves, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out. So the Gemara has a dispute, which is the proper Nusach for the Haggadah. And we have the prayer. We say two Haggadahs. Every Pesach night we say two. We say Mitzchila of the, first we say Avodim Hayinu Lefarvim Mitzrayim. And we finish that one Haggadah. Then we say the second Haggadah. We say two Haggadahs. Second Haggadah is Mitzchila of the Avodah Zarah. We say Na'ashe Karvan HaMakom Lavei Dosa. In the Gemara it's clear that they didn't say two. Rav would say one text in his yeshiva. And Shmuel had a different yeshiva. He said a different text for the Haggadah. And we have combined all the versions of the Haggadah. The Haggadah is very short, but we have embellished it. So he put in a lot of midrashim and a lot of piyutim and a lot of different things. So we really say two different Haggadahs. So this text of the Haggadah is really difficult. That's not the story of Yitzchak and Shai. That years ago our forefathers used to worship Avodah Zorah, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us to be his special nation. How is that a description of Yitzchak and Shai? So Rebbe the Soloveitchik used to say every year that this is the reason why that opinion in the Gemara holds that this is the correct Nusach of the Haggadah. Because the purpose of Yitzchak and Shai was Tavdin HaSalakim HaLahara Zeh. The whole idea of freedom only makes sense if you become Avodim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's the dispute in the Gemara, the machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel, what should you stress and maskul beginus and Messiah Mishrach. So one opinion is, you just stress the story. Forget about the purpose. And the other opinion is, no, the ikar of the Yitzchak Mitzrayim is the tachlis, namely, Tavdin Selekim Allah HaRazah, Kodesh Baruch said in advance, that's going to be the purpose of Yitzchak Mitzrayim, to lead up to Matan Torah, Mammon HaSinah. So that's the source of this machlokes. So it is important. It is important to keep in mind the theme of freedom. Yom Tov or Pesach is called by the Tanoim as Manche Rusei. And there are dinim involved here. The Halacha says that a person is prohibited to become an Eved. He liberates. In the middle of Hallel, Ona Hashem Chani Avdecha, Ani Avdecha Ben Amasecha, Titachta L'Mosteira. So how do you translate that? So the literal translation, I'll let you dray a little bit, but the literal translation seems to read, I have become a slave to God, and thereby He has freed me. By becoming a slave to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He has freed me from other things. That's what real freedom means. Titachta. Not that I am a slave of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore free me, and I wouldn't be a slave to God. No. He says, I am your slave. You have titachta l'moseira. You have broken my shackles, and thereby, by breaking my shackles, and by making me your slave, this is the way you have freed me. That's how we understand the concept of freedom. On Pesach night, there are two mitzvahs that we're obligated to fulfill, in this area, in connection with the freedom. The one is a mitzvah min HaTorah that is very, very difficult, and it's by far the most difficult mitzvah to fulfill on Pesach night. It's a mitzvah that no one ever thinks of. And the other is a mitzvah d'Rabbanah that's pretty easy to fulfill. The mitzvah d'Rabbanah we all know, that b'chol dor v'dor, chayiv v'adam l'haras v'satzma kivu hu yotzim l'mitzvah. In every generation, a person has to demonstrate as if he just went free. How does one demonstrate it? So the Rambam says there are two parts to that mitzvah. You lean on the left side, because years ago the slaves weren't given the opportunity to relax while they were eating, they had to sit. And the free men used to eat in a position of, in a reclining position. So we eat the Hatzeva, to demonstrate that we've been in Chorin. And we drink Arbukosis, we drink four L'chaim, the slaves weren't given anything to drink L'chaim over. And the free men used to be drinking all the time. So in order to demonstrate that we're free, so we drink four times L'chaim. So the Rambam understands that these two are parts of the mitzvah. These are the two parts of the mitzvah. B'chol dor v'dor, chayiv v'adam, l'haras v'satzmo, to demonstrate kivu hayato, even time as if he's free. That's a machlokes between Tosfos and the Rambam regarding the Haseidah. Tosfos' opinion is, the Haseidah is not really a separate mitzvah. Haseidah, to lean on the left side, is a detail, a prat within the mitzvah of matzah. And it's a detail within the mitzvah of Arba Kosis. How should one properly fulfill the mitzvah matzah? By eating matzah, leaning over. The Tosfos has a whole discussion. What if he forgot to lean over, he ate the matzah like this? The Tosfos says, oh, he's not yet to the mitzvah matzah, he has to eat it over again, leaning over. As he drinks the abikosis and he wasn't leaning, so far that he has to drink it over again in a reclining position. In the Rambam, you don't find any of that talk, because the Rambam held that it's not a detail within the din of matzah, or a detail within the din of abikosis. How you should properly drink the wine, or how you should properly eat the matzah. No, the matzah, you yotzeh, whether you're leaning to the right, to the left, sitting, it doesn't matter. The abukosis, you yotzeh without drinking. This is a separate mitzvah. The chol dovador is a separate mitzvah. There's a mitzvah matzah, and a mitzvah mar, and a mitzvah abukosis, and a mitzvah, the chol dovador, chai varam laharas esatzah, to demonstrate that he's a ben chorin. That could be. That could be, meaning the person should tell over the story by telling and by demonstrating. Could be a prat, a detail within the mitzvah of Tzitzis and stuff. That could well be. So the Rambam says that these two aspects, the hasebah, with the drinking of the abakotos, are to demonstrate that the person is a ben chori. But that's the mitzvah midrabbanan. The abakotos with the leaning over the hasebah, that's only midrabbanan, that's not in the Torah. But there is a mitzvah in the Torah that the Mishnah speaks of. That b'chol davodor chayvorim liris esatzna, kiluhu yotzna time. In every generation on Pesach night, every Jewish man, woman, and child should have this feeling and this sensation as if he just left Mitzrayim tonight. How could he possibly feel as if he was never there? I was never there in Mitzrayim. Because in the Haggadah we have to recite, Zidu lohoti HaKadosh Baruch Hu HaRitzenu Mitzrayim HaRiyonu V'Aneinu V'Nevei Neinu M'Shibodim HaYinu L'Tzarim Mitzrayim. We believe that if not for the Yitzias Mitzrayim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made at that time, we would still be slaves to Paro Ada Yayim Hazeh. It's a very strange thing. How can it be? There were so many revolutions over all the years and people were freed. All the Spartans were freed in all the different countries, all the South Africa and everywhere, all over the world. So why should we think like this? It's very strange, but that's what it says in the Chumash. We say, Yosanu Hotem Yisham. And all the generation, not only the Dor Rishon, the first generation of Yetzim Mitzrayim, saved Yosanu Hotem Yisham, and all the following generations, in 1989, we have to say, Yosanu Hotem Yisham. We have the feeling as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, because if not for the fact that He freed our forefathers, we would still be slaves in Mitzrayim Aleyem Hazeh. This is a very difficult feeling to have. This is a mitzvah min ha-Torah. This is not midrabbanan. The mishnah the gemara derives from that pasuk, Yosanu Hotem Yisham. And this is a very difficult feeling that a person has to have. That kilu hu yotem in Mitzrayim. And it's based on this, to have the sensation and the feeling as if he left Mitzrayim tonight. This is what obligates us to recite Hallel on Pesach night. That's how we say in the Haggadah, b'chol davodar chayiv adam, in every generation a person has an obligation, liris hatzatzna, to have the feeling, kilu hu yotzei Mitzrayim, l'fichach anachnu chayovim l'holis l'halel. That's why we are obligated now to recite Hallel. We're not reciting Hallel on Pesach night because it's Yontif. No, that's tomorrow morning. Hallel on Yontif is only in the daytime, not at night. It's the Mishnah Megillah. That you're not yetzei v'nitzvah of Hallel of Yontif by anything you say at night. Hallel has to be in the daytime. Based on a pasuk in Tehillah, while the sun is between rising and setting, in between sunrise and sunset, you have to recite Hallel. And you say Hallel at night, you're not yet to the mitzvah. So what do we say Hallel at night on Leil Pesach? It's a different Hallel. And it's not a Hallel in commemoration of Yitzias Mitzrayim. A Hallel in commemoration of a Yeshua also is only recited in the daytime. Hallel is recited on Hanukkah in commemoration of the Nes that occurred so many years ago. And again, it's only recited in the daytime. You don't recite in the nighttime. Why do we recite Hallel on Pesach night? Unlike all other occasions when the Hallel has to be only recited by Yom. So the answer is given by the commentaries. This is a different kind of a Hallel. This is a Hallel of the Shachanes. We experience this feeling. We're supposed to have this feeling on Leil Pesach, Ki'ilu, as if we just left Mitzrayim tonight. That's a biblical obligation. So lefichach, since we have this feeling as if we just experienced it, see it in time right now, tonight, anachna lefichach anachna hayovim lahalel. That's why we're obligated to say hallel, the shat hanes. If an es occurs, if Yeshua occurs in the middle of the night, then this is not governed by the Mishnah Megillah that says you have to wait till the morning to say the hallel. If you have Yeshua at night, then you say the hallel at night. Only if the hallel is recited in commemoration of an es that occurred years ago, or the hallel is recited out of an expression of Simchas Yontif, then the Mishnah Megillah requires that it has to be said by Yom.
But if it didn't happen in Israel, when we say Hallel all the time, with Israel, they weren't there yet.
That's a very good question. The Gemara asked that question. The Gemara explains why don't we recite Hallel on Purim. Why do we recite Hallel on Chanukah and not on Purim? But the Gemara explains that it was a different kind of a miracle. That the miracle of Chanukah occurred in Eretz Yisrael with his more Hashgacha Pratis, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Lakech Bo Mereshit Hashem Larach Rishono, his more Hashgacha Pratis in Eretz Yisrael. So that's a higher level of a Nes. But the Nes of Purim, since it occurred in Chutzlaret and everything was Behefter, and nothing was Begil Shechina at all, so it's a lower level of a Nes. On a Nes of Chutzlaret, you don't say Hallel. So the Gemara asks your kasha, but we say Hallel. They said Hallel Oz Yashir. They said Hallel at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim and at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf. So the Gemara says, those were Nitzim Gluyim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu only shows the special Hashgacha Pratis in Eretz Yisrael. That's only Mishavri Yisrael HaTayarim. After the Jewish people entered Eretz Yisrael in the days of Yishuv Ben Nun. So from that time on, he said, Any Hashem Elokecha bo mereishis Hashana v'lach Rishana. But before the Jewish people entered Eretz Israel, he was showing Nisim Gluyim in a special Hashgacha process on the Jewish people during the whole period of the Esther Makos and the Yitzhak Mitzrayim and the Kriyas Yamskos and everything. In all 40 years. That's the Gemara in Erech and Daf Yud. Exactly, yes, your Kasha, and explains like that. That Koyim Shavri Yisrael Osayyardin, you are able to recite Halev on Anesha because the Nisim were a special Nisim. But after they crossed over the Yarden, then it didn't change. Then it was limited. The Arba Kaisis that we drink on Pesach night, we recite Bari Pri Agafen over. Whenever you drink wine, you say Bari Pri Agafen. So two cups, we know you have to say Bari Pri Agafen. On the first cup of wine, you're beginning to drink. So you haven't said a Agafen before. The third cup of wine, you drink after you recite Birchas HaMazon. If you say Birchas HaMazon, so Birchas HaMazon is a declaration of Siluk Achila, you finished eating. So if you want to eat anything after you recite Birchas HaMazon, obviously you're going to have to say another bracha. You have to say Birchas HaGofen over the third cup. The question is, what about the second cup of wine and the fourth cup of wine? Do they also require a Birchas HaGofen or not? He just said a Birchas HaGofen before. How long does it take between the first cup and the second? Depends. Some families take longer, some families take shorter. But even if it takes a long time, he knows when he said the Bar Pri Agafen over the first cup that he's going to drink another cup. But is there a Hetzach Adas over here? Why does he have to say another drosh? So this is a major machlok, it's a major dispute among the commentaries on the Gemara. The Rif and Tosfos have a big machlokes about this. The Sfardim, many of the Sfardim, most of the Sfardim, do not say four drosh. They only say drosh on the first cup and on the third cup. They don't say on the second and the fourth because the second cup is covered with the first cup of wine and the fourth cup is covered with the bracha over the third cup. There's no hefsik, there's no hesach hadas, and there's no problem. And the meaning by the Ashkenazim is that we recite a bracha on each one of the four cups. So the question is, why? Why do you have to say sacha bracha levatzali? Just say the bracha yagafen on the first and on the third. Why repeat the bracha over the second cup and the fourth? So the two explanations that are given in the commentaries for this practice that we, the Ashkenazim, have. So one explanation is given that there is a Hesach Hadas. Since there's so much Haggadah to say, so that constitutes a Hesach Hadas. And the Gemara has such a statement which could be interpreted as saying that. The Gemara has a fact, it's something about a Hesach Hadas, which sounds a little bit like it may say that. It doesn't necessarily, it's not really talking about a brocha over eating food. The Gemara is talking about why you have to wash your hands a second time. If you wash your hands before karpas, why do you have to wash a second time before you eat the matzah? You just wash until Sivan is full. Why do you have to wash again? So the Gemara says, well, he said so much Haggadah, it's a Hesach Hadas. So that's the Gemara there is not talking about a Hesach Hadas from eating. That's a Hesach Hadas on the Shmiras HaYadayim. So Taisha says maybe it means that he touched his shoes or he scratched his head or something, which would require him to wash his hands again a second time. It doesn't necessarily imply that when you have a lot of Haggadah to say, it's a Hesach Hadas in the sense of requiring another Birchas HaMeni. But that's what some Rishonim claim. That in between the first and the second cup, and in between the third and the fourth cup, since you're saying a lot, so that also constitutes a Hesach Hadas, and you have to recite another Brach. And others, the Riv, says that that's not the reason why. He says there isn't so much to say between the first and the second, and the third and the fourth cup, that you should consider that a Hesach Hadas. He rather says a different explanation, because each one of the cups of wine is a mitzvah bifnei atzma. Each one is another mitzvah. What does it mean, each one is another mitzvah? The first cup of wine is kiddush. The second cup of wine, you say the brocha asher gyalonu. There are occasions during the year that when we recite the brocha ala yayin. We say kiddush, holding a cup of wine. We say havdol over wine. When you get married, when you get divorced, no brocha is recited at all. So there's no wine. By bris, you say brach over a cup of wine. No, picking up benders, you don't say anything else. You just have wine to make it look good, but you don't really say anything else. Sheva brach is brichas hamazon. A lot of times when you bench, you say brichas hamazon alayyan. So on Pesach night, the Gemara says you have four brachas alayyan. You have the kiddush alayyan, like every Shabbos alayyan. Then you have the second cup is the brach hasher gyalonu. You're supposed to pick up the cup of wine, say the brach hasher gyalonu, say right away, bring me a brach and drink without any talking. A lot of people have a minute that say Lishan Yichud with Hinni and Mikhan Mizuma. The Pashka says that it's a hefstik. And not a lot of talk, let's say a person is staying under the chuppah. And the rabbi says the bracha, whatever it says, what bracha? I got married a long time ago. I say the bracha under the chuppah. Or whatever other brachas you say. So you don't say Hinni and Mikhan Mizuma in the middle. If you want to say Hinni and Mikhan Mizuma, you say it in the beginning.
You don't say in the middle of the Kiddush or the Havdalah. Once you start the bracha, so you finish and you drink it. You're fasting. The rabbis hold Masada, or the Chazanim hold Masada Kiddushin, so they know what the Nusach is. They know by heart. So the second bracha on Pesach night, the second cup is a bracha layayin, Asher Gyalonu. The third coat is the Bichas Amazon alayayin. And the fourth coat is the Halo, the Bichas Hashem. No, that's a remez. The Yerushalmi says that's a remez. Why the Chachamim were interested in instituting four cups of wine. But what did they institute? They didn't just institute the Hoseishim Yisalti. They instituted four brachas ala yayin. They instituted Kiddush ala yayin, Asher Yalonu ala yayin, Bichas Amozen ala yayin, and the Bichas Ashir. The bracha at the end of the Hallel is recited ala yayin. So the Rif says that since each one of these cups of wine is a bracha ala yayin, Kiddush ala yayin, Asher Yalonu, and so on, each one is a mitzvah b'fnei atzmo, like Kiddush, Avdolah, Bichas Amozen, Bichas Erisin, Bichas Nistuin, Abrit Milo, all the different brachas. So each one has to have its own birth of Gopin. This is a very interesting idea that the Rif said. Rashi says that as well in other places. That the birth of Gopin that you say over the second coast and over the fourth coast is not required because of the Hilchot Brichas HaNenim. If a person is thirsty now and he wants to have a cup of wine, of course they have to say a bracha, birth of Gopin. So by the first and the third coast, they have to say birth of Gopin. It's a Brichas HaNenim. By the third and the fourth cup of wine, he's covered. Mikoyach the din, abatzal adam shi'hanim and adam azeh b'loy bracha, that you have to recite a bracha before eating or drinking anything. You're already covered with the brachah gafen in the first cup and the brachah gafen in the third cup. But you have to say brachah gafen on the second and the fourth, because that's the din. When you have a bracha alakos, you have to say brachah gafen whether you need it or not. That's what Rashi says in bracha. There are two passages in the Gemara Brachas that single out wine to be something special. The Gemara says, I'm eating potatoes, and by mistake, instead of saying Barpi Hadam, I said Shahakal Nidhvara. I'm having an orange, and instead of saying Barpi Hueth, I made a mistake and I said Shahakal Nidhvara. I'm eating cookies, and by mistake, I said Shahakal Nidhvara. Anything that you ate, and you said Shahakal Nidhvara, so B'diyeva, the din is you don't have to repeat the Brachas. What happens if he's eating bread or he's drinking wine? So that's a dispute in the Gemara. We pass in the Suyos. Even in bread and wine, you're also Yos. But there's one opinion in the Gemara that if you're drinking wine and by mistake you said Barpi Agafen, you're not. If by mistake you said Shahakol, that you have to say over the Bracha Barpi Agafen. Why? So the Gemara says because it's Gorin Bracha Liyatzma. What does that mean, Gorin Bracha Liyatzma? What in the world does that mean? The Rashi on that Gemara sounds like he says, whenever you made a mistake and you said Shahakal Nidhvara, so it's okay, you can eat the food. You will not be in violation of the prohibition of Asal Adam Shiyahanim and Haram Azeb Lai Brach. You won't be doing the Avera of eating without a Brach. But you will also not be fulfilling the mitzvah of having recited a special Brach of Barpi Agafen. So he said, Barpi Agafen, if you drink wine without any Brach, you did an Avera. You're eating food, you're drinking something without a Brach. If you said by mistake Shahakal and Avera, you're not violating. But you didn't do the mitzvah of saying Barpi Agafen on wine. They made a special tachana to say Barpi Agafen on wine, even if you don't need the bracha. Rashi says, even if you're not interested in drinking. He says, the fellow is saying Kiddush. He doesn't really want to drink any wine. The halacha says he has to say Barpi Agafen whether he likes it or not. The fellow is reciting Birchas Erisin. He has to say Barpi Agafen whether he's interested or not. And then, once he says the bracha, then the Gemara has another, then he has to drink the wine because it's going to look funny. Not that he has to say Barpi Agafen because he has to drink the wine. No. He has to say Barpi Agafen. That was part of the Takana Sachan. That's part of the Kiddush. Then he has to drink it, that it shouldn't look funny. That's what Rashi comments in the Gemara. That's exactly what the Rish says over here. The Gemara has another thing. Let's say a person says Hamotzi, and he's eating a whole meal. So when he eats the potatoes in the middle of the meal, he eats the vegetables, or he eats a kugel in the middle of the meal. It doesn't say Barpi Minimizayim. When he eats the meat, he doesn't say Shahakal Nidhvara. Whatever is in the middle of the meal is covered with the grach of Hamotzi Lachem Noach, with the exception of wine. If you drink wine in the middle of the meal, that's a din in the Gemara in Shulchan Aruch. You have to say Barpi Agafen on wine. But the Gemara says that wine is something special. Gorin Brachol Yatsma. What does it mean? So Rashi says again the whole Chad Gadya. That you have to say Barpi Agafen when you say Kiddush, even though you're not interested in drinking wine. What is he driving at exactly this? That if a person said Hamotzi and he eats a whole meal and he drinks wine in the middle and he doesn't say a special grach. He hasn't violated the aveira of eating or drinking without a bracha. He said amotzi. Just like amotzi covers the bread and the kugel and the vegetables and the main course and the soup and the fish and everything else, it covers the wine also. But he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah, the special mitzvah of reciting bar piyah gofen on wine, because the chachamim made a takana that you have to say bar piyah gofen on wine even if you're not interested in drinking the wine. Like by kiddush, go and bracha liatzmo. So that's what the Rish is driving at over here. An interesting idea. That even though we have already recited the bar piyah gofen on the first cup and on the third cup, and that should really cover the second cup and the fourth cup, special takanas chachamim that think you're saying a bracha shev yolonu, ala yayin, and you're saying the bracha, the brichas hashir, the concluding bracha of the halal at the end of the Haggadah, ala yayin, it's required that you have to say again another bar piyah gofen, like by Kiddush and Abdullah. Whenever you say bracha lakos, you have to say bar piyah gofen. After he drank the wine.
Because it's a different kind of bracha. Maybe it's a kashrumin.
Possibly. When you eat food, the Gemara says it's too late to say the bracha later because you already violated the averis. You can't undo the averis. But here, could be. I haven't come across in the Shavuot. I don't know. It's interesting. Could be. That's our practice. This is what we do all the time by a chasana. You say bracha agafen over the first cup of wine, and the chasana kala take a sip. Then you read the ksuba, and you say bracha agafen again over the second cup of wine. They just said bracha agafen. What do you say again, bracha agafen? So Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam introduced the Kriya Saksuba. Until the day the Rashi Rabbeinu Tam used to have one after the other. Right, the two parts to the marriage. First the day, and then it's Nisuin.
Right. The Kriya of the Ksuba is really a hefsek.
Right. That's what Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam introduced it as a hefsek. What do you need a hefsek for? Until the days of Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, they had one after the other. He said, Bracha Yagofen, they drank the wine, he said, Hariyat, and then he said, Bracha Yagofen again. Mamash, a half a second later. And Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, in that period of history that we showed in quotes, he introduced that a hefsek. What do you need a hefsek? Because it looks funny. They just said bar piyah gofen and it's up fight another bar piyah gofen half a minute later. So what do you accomplish by reading the ksuba? What, it's such a dramatic reading that it takes 5 hours. I remember once I heard Rav Blazer Silver read the ksuba. He had like a dramatic presentation of the reading of the ksuba. It took him, and if anybody heard anybody making noise in the middle, he would stop. He waited for everybody to be quiet. Everybody had to hear every word of his. So how long did it take him? 5 minutes to read the ksuba. So if you pause 5 minutes in the middle of the wine, you have to say another bar piyah gofen. No, that's not a hefsek. So what did the Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam accomplish by reading it at ksuba? That's why some rabbis like to hold the drasha in the middle. Because the whole idea of reading the ksuba is to waste time. It has more of a hefsek. So you should sing over there, you should have the rabbi give a drasha, anything. The longer the drasha, the better. You should have a hefsek in the middle. But what kind of a hefsek is it? It's not a hefsek.
I mean,
it's 5 minutes
like a hefsek, because you said the erison and given the huge size to prepare, you know, for the furniture and so forth, and then they could do it like a year later, the best of the knowledge. That's what I heard.
Right, but we've done away with that. So we have the Nisun immediately following the erison. So what do we accomplish by reading the ksuba in the room? So the Rishonim explained, because it looks funny. Alpi halacha, there's nothing wrong to say bar piyah gofen, bar piyah gofen. Because the first bar piyah gofen, that's like arba kaisis, the second kais. The kais of nisuin is the kais sheni of the two kaises. By a wedding, there are only two out of arba kaisis. So you have to say bar piyah gofen on the second kais because it's another mitzvah, it's another bracha lakos. You got to say another bar piyah gofen, except that it looks a little funny. So on Pesach night, it doesn't look so big. At least you say chach a couple of pages haggadah between the first and the second cup, then between the third and the fourth cup. But by the chasana, you're not going to say anything. It's going to look like a bracha levatala. So in order that it shouldn't look so big, so they instituted to have a hafsoke, the mitzvah of the reading of the ksuba or whatever. But it's not that hafsoke therefore requires of us that we have to say another bar piyah gofen. It doesn't require garnish. What? To wait 5 minutes, mishkan hefsek. It softens it that it doesn't look so bad, but the halacha, there wasn't any problem in the first place. So we pass the halacha that whenever you have two brachas halakos, you have to say bracha halakos for each and every individual bracha halakos. Right, it's not a birchas haneni. I don't know if you can call it a birchas hamitzvah. It's a birchas sheva. It's like asher yalonu, like the birchas hashir. It's part of the birchas sheva that we're going to recite after. It's like a chelik of the Asher Galon and a chelik of the Birchas Hashir. there is an issue that the Gemara has regarding the seder that not everybody fully understands. The institution of charoset. The din is that you have to dip the maror into the charoset, and then you're supposed to shake off all of the charoset. You're not supposed to pile on the charoset and then eat a sandwich of maror with charoset. You're supposed to shake off all the charoset. So what in the world are you dipping it into the charoset for in the first place? So the Mishnah has a dispute. One time, Rav Lezer ben Tzadik on the bottom of Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph claims that it's a mitzvah. What kind of a mitzvah? Mitzvah of the Rabbanon. It's not a mitzvah in the Torah. They say in the Chumash it's a mitzvah of the Rabbanon to have charoset. And the Chachamim disagree with him. They say, no, it's not a mitzvah. The Gemara says, it's not a mitzvah. What in the world do you have it for? But the Gemara says, to kill the bugs or to kill the worms inside the maror. The Gemara says that there are sometimes worms or bugs inside the vegetables that are kosher, but it's not healthy. Have them crawling inside your kishki. So in order to make sure that they're dead before you eat them, so you have to dip the charoses, you have to dip the mor into the charoses and the shum kippah in order to kill these ones. Fine. What is exactly this opinion of Rav Lezer ben Tzadik that it's a mitzvah? What's for a mitzvah? What kind of it's a mitzvah with the rabbanon? What is the purpose of the mitzvah of dipping into charoses? What is it supposed to represent? So the mor is guessing, and they're not sure. So the Gemara says on Daf Kuf Tezainim and Aleph commenting on the Mishnah, my mitzvah. So the Gemara has two suggestions. One suggestion is Zeichel Tapuach, to remind us of this Tapuach tree that the Pasuk in Shir Hashirim refers to Tachas Tapuach Aratikha, that the women would, the men were so tired at the end of a day's work in Mitzrayim, they just wanted to go to sleep, they wanted to die already. And they had no desire to be with their wives, and the women would dress up and they would make love with their husbands under the tapuach tree, and that's how they had the shishim ibum. That's how they had all these babies. And it's not for the women making love with their husbands tachas tapuach, arising them, Klal Yisrael would have been wiped out. That's the chus nashim tzidkani. Think about the same meantime. If the men were working all day and they had no cheshit, they had no desire to live, they had no desire for anything, and the women are the ones who maintained the Klal Yisrael. That's the first opinion. So the Gemara says you have to use tapuach. You have to use tapuach in the charoset. What does tapuach mean? The people always translate tapuach means apples. That's why everybody puts in apples in the charoset. So this is not correct. The Taitis on the list, Daphantinus, points out that Taitis doesn't point this out, but it's a fact that in the Middle East, in the days of the Tanakh, they didn't have any apples. It didn't exist. So when the Tanakh speaks of a tapuach, it means a citrus fruit. That's how Taisus writes on the last daf in time. A tapuach is a citrus fruit. And the Gemara says it over here also. Since you want to have a zeichel of tapuach, the whole purpose of charoset is according to this opinion of Rav Lezer ben Tzadik.
In Hebrew, you call an orange tapuach zahar.
Oh, so that's the real tapuach.
Yeah.
That's the real tapuach.
What is that?
That's what we'll get to. That's what we'll discuss in a minute. So the Gemara says here, if you want to make a zechel tapuach, it should have a sharp flavor. Sorach lekuhuye has to have a very sharp flavor, like a tapuach. An apple doesn't have a sharp flavor. The citrus fruits
they
all have sharp.
Flavor or an aroma? Or aroma. What
does that mean? No, it has to be stingy, like a lemon, like a grapefruit. Has to have some. What is it? Okay, it's a good word. That's what it means, Sorach Lekuhuye. That's that sharp taste. That's one opinion. Then Igmar has another opinion that it's in order to remember Zeichel Tzitz, in order to remember the cement that the Jewish people had to use in order to make all of those pyramids and Eretz inside. So Igmar says that that's the idea, that you want to remember the thick cement and you have to make it Sorach Lesmucha, you have to make it very, very thick, that it should be reminiscent of cement. These are the two views that the Babli has. In case of course from the Yishami, a third view, they're all guessing. Nobody knows exactly what the nature of the mitzvah of the Rabbanim is at the time of Lezer Rav Tzadik says that it's a mitzvah. So the Yishami has a third view that it's supposed to be Zeichel Adam. So much Jewish blood was spilt in Mitzrayim during all the years that they were there, and they were serving, and they were slaves. So to remind us of all of the Dam, so you have to have Charoset. So in other words, you have to pour in red wine. Into the charoset. You have to read something. You have to pour something red into the charoset. And if it's supposed to be zeichel adam, so it shouldn't be very thick. It should be very liquidy. So that's what Taisus tells you what you're supposed to do over here. what are supposed to be the ingredients in the Haraisis and exactly what he's supposed to do with it. So they say, they quote in the name of the Gaonim, that they had an old tradition. The Gaonim followed the Chachmi HaGemara. They lived in Bavos, and the two yeshivas in Bavos. So they say that when you make your Haraisis, it should contain some or all of the following fruits. Those that are mentioned in Shir HaShirim that the Jewish people are compared to. So they say, Tachas HaTapura HaRatiko speaks of the citrus fruit. The Felach HaRima Rakosa compares the Jewish people to a pomegranate. Atena Chonter Fagera compares the Jewish people to a fig tree. El of the Summer compares the Jewish people to a date tree. Egos, you have to use some kind of nut. Elginos Egos Irati. And then Shkedim, you should use Amen. Al Shame, this has nothing to do with the fact that the Jewish people are compared to this Mashiach Hashem, but this is all from the Gonin. Shishokar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Alakeit. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was watching over the end of the 400 years to make sure that when the 400 years were up, the Jewish people would be freed from the tzar. So Taisa says that these are the ingredients that you're supposed to include in your Haroset. Many people don't include any of these. Any of them. That's what Taisa says is supposed to be. It has nothing to do with apples. It has nothing to do. Cinnamon is later. So the Chassidish Yisrael says you should put in cinnamon. But that's not one of the official fruits that the Tesis mentions. The Tesis says you should have nuts, almonds, citrus fruits, dates, figs, pomegranates. That's supposed to be the ingredient. And then what do you do with it? The Tesis says first it should be very thick. Before you dip in the Haraisis, before you dip in the mur, it should be very thick. That it should remind us of the cement. And then, as you're about to dip in, right before you're about to dip in the maror, so then Taisa says you should pour in a lot of red wine, that it should be zechel adam, that it should remind us of the red blood of the Jewish people that were killed in Egypt. And then you should dip in the maror, because the Gemara considers dipping in the maror into the charoset of the Dovish at Tibul of the Mashke. Apparently there's some kind of mashke there, so it's going to be a very thick paste, like some people have a very thick paste for haroses. How is that a mashke?
They have to pour. They're going to use the Avilah Sardan. They use their sword.
Okay, so then it says in Shulchan Aruch, if you live in a community or a country where the Mechal Lila be an Avilah Sardan, then you should not use red wine, you should use white wine. And you won't accomplish anything as far as the haroses is concerned. You should use white wine for the other places and for the Kiddush and for everything. But if you don't have that problem with any Alilo Saddam, they're not going to make any trouble. Then it's a heeder to use red wine for the Haraites in order that it should be liquidy, that it should remind us of Jewish blood, not Christian blood. It should remind us of the Jewish blood that was spilled in the Mitzrayim throughout all the generations. What exactly are you supposed to do with this Haraites? According to the view of the Chachamim, the Haraites is not a mitzvah, and it's merely for the purpose of killing the bugs, of killing the worms. They just dip in the mor, you shake off the haroses and you eat your maror, and that's all. According to Rav Lezer ben Rav Tzadok, though, he says that it's something more than just for health purposes, to kill the bugs or something. So, is that all you're supposed to do, is dip in the maror, or is there something more? So there are three sources in Rishonim where it seems that according to the view of Rav Lezer ben Rav Tzadok, the proper thing is that not only should you dip the maror into the haroses, you're supposed to eat the haroses. In addition to eating the matzah and the maror, and drinking the abacosis and eating afikam, you're supposed to eat part of the haraisis. The one source is the Rambam, that's the earlier source. The Rambam writes in the Pirush HaMishnayis, in his commentary on this Mishnah, that according to the view of Rav Lezer ben Rav Tzadok, that haraisis is a mitzvah, he would require that you should recite a bracha, asher kedushanu b'mitzvayis v'tzivanu al achilas haraisis. So obviously he holds that he's eating the haraisis. Then the Rambam says, well, we don't have that bracha in our Haggadah, so obviously we don't pass like Rav Lezer ben Rav Tzadok, so we don't have to eat any haroses. That's where the Rambam writes. But he seems to be writing clearly that according to Rav Lezer ben Rav Tzadok, you would have to eat a kezayis of haroses. The second source, the next source, historically speaking, is the Mordechai at the very end of the last page in Sotchim, where the Mordechai is bothered with a kasher. See, what is a kasher? Very strange. When a person is going to eat everything altogether, the Vasachas is going to swallow a kezayis matzah, and a kezayis maror and a kezayis haroset. That's what he says. He doesn't say a sandwich to like we say, a kezayis matzah, a kezayis maror, a kezayis korban pesach. That's what I would have said. He says kezayis matzah, kezayis maror, kezayis haroset. He's bothered with Akasha. How can he swallow so much at the same time? The throat is not big enough to hold all of that. So he gives the whole discussion. How do you solve the problem of swallowing everything? So the in brackets, they put in parentheses over here in brackets to touch up the text to the Marcel. What are you talking about? Kazayis Karaisis. Whoever heard of eating Kazayis Karaisis, when you eat the Hill sandwich, you should eat a Kazayis Matzah, Kazayis Mara, and in the days of the Beit HaMikdash, you eat a Kazayis Korban Pesach. Kazayis of the meat of the Korban Pesach. So they corrected the reading that that's what it should say. That he's bothered with the kasha, how can he eat a Kazayis Pesach Matzah Mara? The throat is not big enough to swallow so much at one time. That's the kasha. But the way we have the text of the Mordechai, if you don't amend the text, we're not so sure that the emendation is correct. It could be that the Mordechai is of the opinion, like the Rambam, that you don't include the Korban Pesach in the Torah. The Rambam says the Kriche, the sandwich is only the Matzah and the Mara, but not the Korban Pesach again. And he holds that the Charosis, you need a Kazayis. The way we have the reading in the Mordechai sounds like you need a Kazayis. But Charosis, the Kontra of Lezer, Kontra of Lezer of Torah, calls the Charosis a Mitzvah. No, this is a Mordechai with a questionable text. And the other is a Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayos, who says that that's what Rav Lezer Rav Tzadik says, and we don't pass him like him. He says, in our Haggadah, we don't have the Bracha, we don't pass him. So Halacha L'Maaseh, I would have said it doesn't exist. There's no mitzvah to eat Haroyim. But you look in the Shulchan Aruch, it says, yes. It says in the Shulchan Aruch that just like you're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach all day long in order to yechal matzah and teyavon, Yeshomrim, there are those who are of the opinion that you shouldn't eat any of the fruits that are going to appear in the Charoisis in order that you should eat the Charoisis L'tayavah. So if the sole purpose of Charoisis is to dip in the Marah, to kill a bug or whatever, and then you shake off the Charoisis, you're not eating any Charoisis, what do you mean you want to eat the Charoisis with a Geshmak L'tayavah? But you're not eating any Charoisis. So the Ramah quotes this from the Maharil, this Chumr, not to eat fruits with which you would normally make some charoses with an Erev Pesach, and not eat the charoses with the oven. It clearly is of the opinion that you're supposed to eat some charoses on Pesach night with the oven. See, apparently he's alluding to this view of Rav Lezer ben Tzadik. He thinks that not only is it a mitzvah to dip in the maror into the charoses, it's a mitzvah to eat a little bit charoses. What does the mitzvah represent? So those are the three explanations that are given by the Talmud. Either Zechel Adam or Zechel Tapuach to reminisce about these trees. Or Zechelatit, to remember the cement that the Jewish people were using. Oh, so that's the kasha, why don't we say a bracha? So the tour says, whenever you have an ikar and a tafel, let's say I have an ikar and a tafel, I eat potatoes and I put salt on it. So the person eats potatoes and says, Baruch Yadama. A person sits and eats salt and says, Shahakam Yudhvara. What if a person eats potatoes with butter on the potatoes with salt? He doesn't say a bracha, shahakal, in addition to an adon. The potatoes are the ikir, and the salt and the butter is only a tafel, so you don't have to recite a bracha on the tafel. Birach al ikir, pater es atfela. So we're used to thinking about ikir and tafel in the area of birchas hanehem. Do you ever have such a thing in a birchas hamitzvah? If you have two mitzvahs, one is an ikir, one is a tafel. It really sounds funny. One is an ikir, one is a tafel, and you only have to say birchas hamitzvah on the ikir. And the Tafel mitzvah doesn't require a bracha. It sounds very strange. So on the last daf in Sochim, Taisus quotes a Yerushalmi that says like that, that that's the interpretation of the issue in the last Mishnah. There is a dispute, a machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmoel, in the last Mishnah, whether you have to say a bracha on the Korban Pesach and on the Korban Chagiga, or it's sufficient with one bracha on the Korban Pesach and no bracha is needed on the Korban Chagiga. Why should anybody think that you don't have to say a bracha on each one of the mitzvahs separately? The basis quote you show me that it's a situation of an ikar and a tofel. Even though we don't accept that opinion of Rabbi Shmuel that that's an ikar and a tofel, but the principle of Rabbi Shmuel we do accept. If you'll ever find a case of two mitzvahs, one is an ikar, one is a tofel, so then the Torah says we will talk like Rabbi Shmuel. We'll only say bracha on the ikar and not on the tofel. So the Torah says, right, so the Torah says since he said a bracha on the moror, he dipped the moror into the charoses, so he said bracha on the moror. And the charosis is tofel to the maror, even though it's also a mitzvah bishnei atzma, but it's considered tofel to the maror, so it doesn't require its own independent job.
Why do you say when you do a mitzvah
of
the rabbonim, and the rabbonim will have the rabbonim? That would be actually the rabbonim of the ikur.
Yeah.
Maror is the rabbonim. No.
Yeah, but we don't eat them together.
First
you eat separately, then
you
eat
them. What if you eat them together? You say
that
one of them is
the apple of the
ice. But if you say that the ice is the ichor, so, I mean, it looks like...
No, ichor and tophel doesn't mean if you do them, that you eat them, you swallow them at the same time. You're doing them separately, but one is an ichor, one is a tophel. So the principle of birach halikha, patras ha-tfeilo, applies. That's what the Turi answer. And others say a different explanation based on the passage in the Rambam, which seems to give in the Yarach HaZokah. It seems to pass from like Rav Lezer Ben Tzadik, but it is a mitzvah, and it seems to be implying a different reason. Why not bracha as you say? But people should keep in mind that the charesis is not so simple. We don't, not everybody, or most people, put it like that, most people, the sardim, a lot of sardim are very mocked about this. They'll use all of these ingredients, or many of these ingredients that the Tosafot will mention. The pomegranate with the dates, with the almonds, with the figs, and the whole business. Yeah, because I separately, not to eat it with the maror, to eat it separately from the maror. The zroah is usually broiled. So our meaning is that we don't eat broiled meat on Pesach night. Most people are meaning not to eat broiled meat. The Mishnah records Tumen Hogan after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So some had many adopted to eat broiled meat as a zecher called Pesach, which had to be broiled. And most communities have the minig, the doctor not to eat broiled meat, that no one should think that we're eating carbonis outside of the Beit HaMikdash. So that's the common practice today, that most people today do not eat broiled meat on Pesach. So that's why he says it.
Shouldn't the same thing apply to the beta, which is a symbol of Chagiga, isn't it?
But it's not meat. It's not meat or chicken.
But the beta is used as a bait in the car, where we only eat different eggs that are not broiled.
If you want to, you can eat that egg also. You just won't have a broiled egg for tomorrow night.